Chapter 2. I sat down at my computer last year, that was 1997, and looking out over Bronte Beach, I started to write about a jet plane I was watching gain height after taking off from Sydney Airport. My writings turned into a short essay on flight, acknowledging the influence of Adolf Hitler, who had provided the scientists that built his V-2, the first space rocket. I also made another observation that Hitler drove the Jews from Europe, and I believe as a consequence the State of Israel came into being. As I understand it, the Messiah is the one who will get the Jewish people back into their homeland, according to legend. So it seems obvious to me that if that prophecy is correct, then Hitler was the Messiah. An idea so outrageous as to have merit. When I looked at the word Messiah, it breaks up into me, SS, IAH. Now the SS was the sign of the Nazis, and AH are the initials of Adolf Hitler. All very coincidental. As I see it, the universe does not have a right and wrong. That's a concept probably developed by parents to protect and control children. Many people would accept the idea that wild animals don't do wrong to each other, but we believe we humans do. To keep a social and cohesive society, it is necessary in theory to apply this idea of right and wrong, enforcing it through a system of laws. But would the universe have such laws? It appears to make no moral judgments, but instead indicates a no-fault system. So what about those persons such as Adolf Hitler who appear to have got away with doing wrong? Does a god punish them somehow? Some religions suggest that many evildoers could be found roasting in hell for their misdeeds. Therefore, justice would have to work even beyond the grave. But I believe justice is a human term for revenge. And in a no-fault system, it shouldn't exist. Anyway, I went on to suggest that the universe itself is alive, and galaxies could be living creatures. I came to this conclusion because of the possibility that every atom could have the singularity at its center. In other words, everything has the same center, regardless of who or what it is. Cosmology theory predicts that the universe started from a singularity, and a singularity should be found at the center of all black holes, which might mean that black holes form a shell around that area after creation takes place. This is the place where science fiction writers have found interstellar gateways, where by entering a large black hole you end up coming out of a wormhole somewhere far, far away. Now, as I understand it, supposedly Stephen Hawking, a mathematician, asked the question, when is a black hole not a black hole? And his own answer was, when it's a white hole. So it seems that a black hole and a white hole are the same thing. Maybe one's emitting radiation while the other is sucking it in. Possibly they might be different ends of a wormhole. Well, there again, a white hole could be a black hole that has covered itself in so much matter that it radiates like a sun. This in turn implies that beneath the surface of our sun, there could be a black hole capable of acting as a gateway to other star systems, and all that needs to be done is to find a way into the sun without burning up. It could be that the supposed cooler areas of a sunspot could be used to get past the event horizon surface where all the molten mass is collected and then into the black hole. This leads on to the projection that the great black hole at the center of our galaxy supplies energy to all the suns and planets in our system, like a mouth of a living creature. It might even hunt other galaxies for food, seeing that when galaxies collide, bright new blue stars are formed. If they are capable of reproduction, then they should be capable of eating. All of this hypothesizing about the cosmos resulted in me writing these words If this is so, then the whole universe is a lie. When I looked up to read that line, to my shock, it was written in italics. Even though I didn't know then how to change to italics. Still in shock, I got up from my keyboard and looked out of my sunroom window and saw that the roof of the house across the road, which is some 8 meters below and 50 meters away, was impaled on a huge rainbow. I have never seen such a rainbow so close. I have never seen a rainbow so close. I called my wife Masako and our children Gemma and Stella to come and see. Everyone was impressed. Quickly I took some photos before it disappeared. Now I know by pressing on the keyboard control and I, it automatically switches the font to italic. An easy mistake to make. But it is funny it should happen just when I wrote that particular line. Out of all the lines I've ever written on my computer. For a further coincidence, I returned to Adolf Hitler. In the world of horoscopes, Adolf was an Aryan who loved other Aryans, that's Aryans with a Y. Mars is their planet, and Mars is the god of war, and the ram is their animal representative. The anagram of Mars is ram. Another is arms. Invert the M and you get W for wars. All very simplistic, but somewhat disconcerting. Now, to go back to the interstellar travel via the sun. If it is possible to star travel this way, and if a more advanced civilization does exist, then maybe it is already doing just that. So any star system travelers might be cloaked like an ice comet. As the ice would give a certain amount of protection against the heat while approaching or exiting a sun. From what I've read, I understand that ice comets do fairly regularly crash into the sun. Jokingly, I wrote that they probably all come out of the sun, like the Hun, the German fighter pilots, who use the sun behind them to fly their biplanes into a surprise attack. Earlier, I went on the internet looking for a picture of Mars to use in the essay, and I found one at a NASA site. The picture was taken on May 22, 1997, by Carlos E. Hernandez, and it looks remarkably like a caricature of Adolf Hitler, and he appears to be winking. I find it uncanny that a scientific photograph of the Red Planet, the mythical god of war, should bear a striking resemblance to the last great war maker. I ended up writing that it looks like he's keeping a watchful eye open for visitors coming out from the sun. NASA's website at http://nasa.gov is the location of that particular photo of Mars. The open left eye is at 2 o'clock and the closed one is around 7 o'clock. Since early times, mankind has been a solitary creature, even when in a group. The day-to-day experience of having to be aware of danger made it necessary to be prepared against attack. Dangers range from the environment, wild animal, to one's own species. So the idea of enemies is important for survival. If they attack you, that's bad. And if you attack them, that's usually good. So the idea of good and bad appears to stem from the need to defend and attack. In many mammals, it appears that all other creatures outside of the immediate family group are considered enemies or food. One bad, the other good. Therefore, possibly, whether you are the one being eaten or the one eating decides your idea of what's good and bad. But when things are bad and something dies, all that is really happening is energy is changing form from one shape to another. and everything is always changing its shape. Because the universe created this operating system, it should not have a good and a bad view. It is an observer, and all observations seem to suggest it is impartial. Otherwise, there would be no reason to say, how could God let this happen? If the universe does appear to interfere, it is called a coincidence at one level and divine intervention at another, depending on the amount of personal spirituality and superstition involved. All religions are based on the notion that it is possible to get the Creator to interfere on their behalf, and in groups is best done through intermediaries called priests. Having faith that a priest can contact the divine allows the priest to make up what they think the divine thinks and then impose their thoughts on their followers, which over centuries of indoctrination becomes fact rather than fancy. A priest's greatest weapon is the ability to instill fear of the divine into his followers through the accusation of bad doings. Some religions, in what appears to be a time-saving exercise, tell their followers that they are born full of sin. So from birth they are subject to intense ritual cleaning rituals to try to save their souls. The problem continues because all the new priests are recruited from the ranks of the sinners and believe themselves to be in danger of divine punishment. Thus, there appears to be no way to stop the dog chasing his tail. Moses had chiseled his 10-point plan, started the latest cycle, and for the Christians, Jesus unwittingly shifted it up a gear, and still they all race around, waving at us to come and join them. I have always enjoyed a beer or two. My father and his father also enjoyed the amber nectar and paid regular homage to it. The bittersweet sensation as it passed over the tongue and into the gullet is what life is all about, or thereabouts anyway. But the thing that struck me was that without the ethanol alcohol, it wasn't worth drinking. Same went for wine, regardless of its vintage. Take out the minus OH group, and what you've got is fruit juice. The alcohol doesn't mature with time, only the fruit juice. Or does it? So really, all alcohol drinks are ethanol dressed up in a different skirt. Different occasion, different taste, but the same golden bullet in every drink. And what a golden bullet. No wedding would be worth having without it. What 21st or Buck's night would last into the small hours of the morning on orange juice? Drinking and getting drunk is a primary rite of passage. And for many young men, talking to women requires lots of courage, and there is nothing as good as alcohol for supplying that commodity. It is the tiger they have to learn to tame. To hold their beer in contest is a sign of manhood, camaraderie, mateship, best buddies. All occur only after enjoying a beer together. Beer binds friendships, if you were to believe the ants. In truth, it often does the opposite. Ethanol is classified as a depressant, even though its first action is to stimulate. Its main target is to depress. Again, the dog chases its tail, because the depressive side could be a few days away, and to get rid of it, have another drink. Ethanol would appear to have characteristics similar to a parasite, in the way it latches onto its victim. It is the greatest scourge to Western civilization simply because a lot of young men never learn to tame it completely, and the depressive side of it only needs to run amok once for massive family damage to result. I believe it is the single biggest contributor to youth suicide. Older people probably know more bad stories about alcohol than good ones. The golden bullet in the brain soon turns to lead, and the poisoning continues till death. So what's the good side of alcohol? In moderation, it's fine, even wonderful. but without people drinking it in excess, the legal fraternity would lose a lot of its criminal cases. Police numbers would be cut by a large amount. Some courts would have to close, putting magistrates on the streets, and many doctors and nurses would be retired. Unthinkable, putting all those people out of a job. All the people who help broken families, such as the Salvation Army and the welfare agencies, would be lost if it wasn't for the drunk. Alcohol supports a huge part of all Western society's income, and the brewers and the distillers are all major contributors to the government coffers, though a lot of the money they provide is used up paying the salaries of the magistrates, the police, and the hospitals involved in the side effects of excessive drinking. So what's the answer? My guess is to decriminalize all drugs and let the drug companies take over their manufacture and distribution. The quality control they could bring could save many lives. Eventually, replacement drugs might be developed that would be considerably less dangerous and hopefully would end up only taking the emphasis away from alcohol and nicotine. The main problem in having only three legal addictive drugs, caffeine, nicotine, and alcohol, is that it doesn't allow for less harmful drugs to replace them through a modernized form of natural selection. The more addictive drug heroin is so readily available that it has been probably already saturated its potential market and would not increase its usage significantly. More than likely, it will decrease against the safer competition. Let the marketplace decide which drugs will be popular. To raise the banner and call for the protection of our children and the destruction of all illegal drug dealers sounds great. A big vote winner. But the only people who benefit from these catchphrases are the politicians and the three legal addictive drug manufacturers, the insurance brokers, the judiciary, the media, and the entertainment industry, who need villains for their stories. Everybody else loses. The Western political system is reliant, probably addicted, to the revenue it receives from these manufacturers and all the associated industries. Governments everywhere will be uneasy at the thought of losing that known and predictable supply of cash. Consequently, people are being restrained from evolving towards a more productive and healthy lifestyle, while the free market isn't truly free. Everyone already has freedom of choice. It's just governments use their choice to restrict others. But the real problem is the degree of restriction and who's applying the pressure to try and keep the situation from changing. Try as they might, change is unstoppable and reform inevitable. Eventually, the big money will be on the drug companies producing less harmful drugs, not the brewing or tobacco companies with their thousands of government-sanctioned deaths each day. Probably successful class actions against these companies will force the governments of the world, to change the laws as their revenues dry up. Someday, it might even be possible to sue individual governments for these genocidal policies. Sometimes I wonder if I will ever see our face again. I don't have the zeal I had before and I miss it. Maybe zeal is addictive, and that's why I don't have it anymore.